Hello, Clara listeners. This is Zoe. This is just to let you know of a content warning for this episode of Clara, Conversations on Shinto. Because we talk about Ama no Owato, and because talking about Ama no Owato does include themes of rejoicing in one's body without shame and how to cope with depression, we are providing this content warning for sexual themes and depression. Please, as always, take care of yourself, and now, the show must go on.
The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the hosts. We advise you to go out and think for yourself.
Hello and welcome to episode 9 of Clara, Conversations on Shinto, a podcast where two friends and fellow practitioners of Shinto in the Anglosphere talk about their faith, its cultural, historical, and other contexts, and try to bring knowledge and community to others. Today's episode is The Sun in the Cave. How you doing, Nairi?
Same old. I don't know if I should, I don't know if that's entirely the case, what with the recent book and other publication stuff between you and me. How are you doing, Zoe?
Well, I started a new job. Those of you who have been following my poetry channel probably already know that. And it's been fun. It's actually been very eventful. I'm also super excited for the anthology that we're in, and we can actually talk about that now this time. It's Queer for the
Yay.
New Year by Balances 7 Press.
Yay, yes. Yes, it was a while in coming, and here we are.
Mm-hmm.
I have my copy. I think you have your copy. It has been a bit of an undertaking, but I'm glad to finally be seeing it. And it's got a little bit of an epilogue to my new novel, Confluence, which, as of last week, I heard has been nominated for the Nebula Award, the prestigious science fiction and fantasy Writers Association Award. Mind you, it's only been nominated once. It needs 9 more nominations to go on the actual ballot, but it's on the reading list, and I'm very flattered.
Honestly, if you do get there and everything, I may have to just toss you a book to get signed by someone if they show up.
I mean, let's talk about that off camera, because I have some news for you.
Ah, interesting.
Yes.
Anyway, so here we are. It's December. And has it snowed where you're at?
A little bit, but it didn't last very long.
It never really seems to last very long outside of like the mountains and everything here, but
yeah, these days.
But it still happens. And let me tell you, the Seattle area gets really squirrely when it's icy.
Yeah, I imagine so, given the usual weather there.
Mm-hmm. So, well, what do we generally associate, like, December with?
Well, you know, in the Western world, you know, winter, and, you know, because of Christian cultural hegemony, Christmas.
Not that there's anything wrong with Christmas. I like a good bit of fried chicken as much as the next, show worshiper, but anyway.
Christmas, you know, the changing of the year and so on, that sort of thing. Of course, also a important point in the ritual calendar for Shinto.
Well, would you like to go off on that, Doc?
Oh yeah. It's the arguably some of the holiest days in the calendar, since you clean the house in order to welcome the New Year's gods, and you know, you clean the household altar, and you visit your home shrine, and you know, there's this sort of ritual and renewal and cleaning, and you know, it's setting things. It's sort of like a reset for the new year. But you know, in a different sense, I think we can we might also look at the story from both the Kojiki and the Nihon Shoki of Amaterasu Omikami, the Kami-sama of the sun, going into the cave for a while. Not staying there, but going there for a while.
Ama no Iwato, yeah?
Yes, Ama no Iwato, the rock cave of heaven.
I generally heard, and this is just me going off of like what I would assume like some basic understanding of it would be, isn't that generally just associated with solar eclipses?
I could see that. Yeah, that makes sense.
But what is that story though?
So the I'm gonna tell it as best I remember it, because as we always say, the Kojiki is not the Shinto Bible, and you really can't look at it that way,
Nor should you.
nor should you. It's it this is it these are the, there's a lot of lore of a lot of kinds from all over Japan, and it's not that it's this one book that that is the holy book. It is a book that is particularly important because it collects these stories, but it also merges them with very mundane politics of the I think it was the Nara and into the early Heian. But at any rate, Susanoo no Mikoto, Kami of Storms, one of the I think it was the first the, there was the, tr the that triad of children of the creator gods, was upset at having lost his mother, and so he went on a bit of a rampage.
He threw a bit of a tantrum.
He one of the things that he did was he dropped, I think it was a flayed horse, through the ceiling of Amaterasu Omikami's abode, like her palace. And killed one of her attendants, one of her retainers who was weaving. And she was already fed up with him because he was nothing but trouble over and over. And she decided she had had enough. So she went into the Amano Iwato, the heavenly rock cave, and shut the door. And the world went dark, cold. And the myriad the yaoyorozu the 800 million or however you say it, the myriad gods, the panoply of gods, gathered at the mouth of the heavenly cave, and they said, yeah, this is a problem, because we kind of need the sunlight, and that's not gonna work out for us or for the humans if it stays dark. Then Ame no Uzume no Mikoto, praise be, had a plan in that she would, what is the most artful way I can put this? She would perform a divine burlesque show
That's
on top of an upturned washtub.
that is definitely a way to say it. I mean, I guess I'm always one for just the more straightforward thing. She went topless and danced about.
And the thing that I find particularly empowering in that is that her fearless delight in her own body, her audacious, even shocking delight, because usually, like in some of these older English sources, you see her name like translated, which frankly, you don't translate proper nouns. But it's interesting that the kanji that's used to spell her name is sometimes rendered as Heaven's forthright woman, Heaven's shocking woman. But through her shocking and bold love of her body, apparently Amaterasu Omikami in the cave was curious about what was going on outside, so she opened the door just a bit. And in the tree next to, I think it was a sakaki, like one of the clayera plants, next to where Aminouzume was dancing, there were different magatama that were suspended, but also a mirror. And from what I recall, Amaterasu Omikami emerged, like just peeks out of the cave and sees a reflection of herself in the mirror and goes, "Oh," and then sees Aminouzume dancing and goes, "Oh," and at that point, I forget which kami it is. I think one of them is Ame no Tajikara no Mikoto, but there's other ones who pull her out of the cave the rest of the way, and they seal the entrance, and they go, "Ha-ha! We've got you now! Yay! Sunlight has come back to the world!" All thanks to the power of Ame no Uzume no Mikoto and her delight in her wonderful curves. But that time when the light vanished, You know, when the sun went into the cave and all was dark. There is a variety of ways we can look at this.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess going from my own reading onto this and everything here, because let's be real, Doc, I can't let you steal the whole show, can I?
I mean.
But, so, a lot of it is the same way in there and everything, that it was Amaterasu no Mikoto and Susanoo o no Mikoto. Correct me if I'm wrong when I'm saying those.
Amaterasu Omikami, rather than Mikoto, in her case.
Yeah, thank you. Amaterasu Omikami and Susanoo no Mikoto, being siblings, had a bit of an argument on who could be the better divine ruler of heaven, kind of thing. That's one way that I've heard it.
Oh yeah, the contest. Yeah, they had a contest. Yeah,
and they both made some very impressive things. And both of them can find themselves the victor of this. Susanoo no Mikoto, upset that his sister wouldn't admit his own prowess, threw a tantrum. From that tantrum, he threw a flayed horse into Amaterasu Omikami's weaving hall, killing one of her retainers who was weaving. Amaterasu Omikami looks at this and goes, "You know what? I don't really have to deal with this. Bye." Because, as it turns out, being in a high-pressure job can really weigh down on you.
Yeah.
And it's not like she was given much of a choice in the matter, just her... She was just said, "No, you handle this. I've done my deed. You're up next. Later." And in her frustration, her distraughtness, her remorse, she seals herself in the cave. Again, the 8 million kami come over and just like, "Okay, so this is a problem. Darkness has enveloped the land. Humanity is in trouble. Monsters are starting to roam the earth. What do we do here?" So they devise some things, including hanging Magatama from Sakaki. Sakaki? Am I getting that right?
I do believe it was Sakaki, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. On top of that, they also brought out some chickens.
Oh, I didn't know about the chickens.
This is one of the ones that I ended up reading from, like, a wiki copy of the Japanese corpus. Mm. And from what I was reading here, it's like, at first the gods gathered chickens of Tokoyo no Nagaana Kidori. And, you know, you get like a rooster to crow when the dawn comes.
Right, right.
That didn't work. It's just like, "No, I understand what you're trying to do, knock it off." And that's kind of the impression that I'm getting here. Like, Amaterasu is still in a funk because her younger sibling acted out and she has to find a way to lay down the law on her side. But how do you do that with someone as headstrong as her younger sibling?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Eventually, they get out the metal mirror. They hang it in front of the cave. They have the chickens crowing again. Still nothing. And then Ame no Uzume goes topless and dances a burlesque on top of an overturned washtub. And everyone's just like, "What?" And it's like, "Oh, wait, this woman is very attractive."
Uh-huh.
Instant hooting and hollering. Because, well, folks, let me just be real with you here. People will always appreciate beauty wherever it is found, and sometimes beauty is found dancing topless on an overturned washtub.
Mm-hmm.
Amaterasu Omikami hears all this, peeks her head out of the cave, and depending on who you're asking, she sees herself in the mirror, or she sees Ame no Uzume, or she sees both, and is astounded that they have found another sun divinity. But end of the story, she still comes out of the cave. The cave gets sealed back up. There is much rejoicing.
Yay!
And, well, Doc, I think we also talked a bit about this during Pride Month, didn't we?
Yes, that there's nothing straight about that story.
Mind, we are talking as, again, I tend to describe myself as violently queer. I mostly just do that because I am unapologetic about it. But how would you describe yourself, Doc?
Well, it depends on who's asking, I guess, as you well know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the simplest way of saying it would be, you know, of course, a trans lesbian. I like to use the term dyke because that's a thing that I feel very strongly about as sort of an appropriated and refashioned into an instrument of power term. I've described myself as a sword lesbian who is a sword in one respect. There's in a lot of ways that I describe myself, but basically, you know, like, you know, the how to put this, you in listener land may have heard of the expression not gay as in happy, but queer as in F you.
Yep. Those are words to live by if you ask me, but...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just want to make sure that that's stated here from both of us before we go into different readings here, because I think it's a pretty official stance of Clara here as two very openly trans-feminine lesbians.
Yeah.
Going off about that here. But this is something that I want to bring up here under the context of a creative here. It could be read that Amaterasu Omikami could have imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
And I think that's honestly a fair thing to read into that because, oh, hey, you are the ruler of the heavens. Oh no, this is all my job. And no one has really taught me how to do this. Uh-oh. That would be a lot of responsibility to put on anyone here, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, in light of a situation like that, if in the middle of that, you know, you suddenly wound up with, like, the, you know, a horse crashing through the ceiling, of course you'd freak out. Obviously.
And someone saying that they could do your job better.
Yeah, it'd be like, oh yeah, well, all right, come and try. If you think it could do it, okay, sure.
Fine, be that way. Goes off and sulks.
Yeah.
And I can relate to that. There have been some jobs where I've been thrust into leadership position before I was even out of training. And I never want to work those jobs again. Let me be real. But it's stressful. It's anxiety inducing. You're just out there going, I'm supposed to be the expert. Oh no.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And speaking in this position of working a new job here, I work tech. As soon as I say those words, everyone's just like, oh, can you fix my computer? And I want to take this person by their lapels and say, do you have the parts for it? Have you tried troubleshooting it yourself? No. Leave me alone. But you work tech. You should be able to fix it. Yeah, but if I only know where the heck I'm supposed to be going here. Also, tech is a big field. My specialty is in networking.
I had to deal with this recently in my expertise. The people who go, you're a public historian who has a blog. Can you answer me this really detailed historical question that I'm just dying to know? And most of the time, it's not something that I can immediately answer. And my reply is, how much are you willing to pay me? Here are my rates.
Mm-hmm. As you should.
Right.
And it's frustrating.
Yeah.
And I can deeply relate to that.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. It really mm-hmm. is.
It's. And, oh God.
It's presumptuous of time and energy and interest and what have you to do that, you know, in the first place. It really is. And so for someone also, like, just if I imagine, right, you know, Amaterasu Omikami's position there, you know, for someone who's in that kind of position, you know, granted you're not, like, you know, carrying the weight of being the light of the world on your shoulders necessarily, you know. But, like, mm-hmm. For someone in that position where you're sort of, like, up against... Because in her case, like, it was tradition at that point. Like, she was the heir to her parents and so on. That could be really crushing.
Mm-hmm. And bringing that up on, like, the heir to your parents and everything here. Parentification is a thing for, like, eldest kids.
You know, I know.
Mm-hmm. I'm also bringing that up because, again, one of the versions of this story still goes off about how Amaterasu Omikami has to actually sit down and find a way to chastise her younger brother, Susanoo Ono Mikoto. How do you deal with that?
Yeah.
How do you sit down and say someone who you are, for all intents and purpose here, peers, and say, no, get the hell out. And eventually she ended up saying that and shaving him bald and ripping out his toenails and fingernails.
Mm-hmm.
And casting him to earth and saying, don't come back until you learn how to behave better.
And what did he do? He got drunk, turned his girlfriend into a comb, and slew a serpent or something to that effect.
And I mean, he grew.
Yeah, he did. He did. Like, and now he's got his own... He's got his own shinko, his own shrine faith.
Mm-hmm. And from what I hear, he's also a pretty decent poet.
Yes. Well, I mean, if you enjoy sake that much, I mean, I can imagine.
Mm-hmm. But even stepping away from the imposter syndrome thing here, something that I know affects a lot of people dear and near in my life, especially in the wintertime, is seasonal affective disorder. Winter depression. And... you know the joke, sucks for them, but I'm built different, and I kind of prefer the winter time because it's a lot darker sooner, and I can do my own thing in the dark. But there's something to be said about reading this as Amaterasu Omikami having depression as well. Going back with the read where it is she and her siblings trying to grieve over the death of their parents, their mother. That has to be heartbreaking.
Yeah.
That has to be hard. It's hard grieving over loss that deep and keenly. And building off of that same kind of position here, again, Susanoo Ono Mikoto and his tantrums only aggravating Amaterasu Omikami's grief, her remorse, because she has to be the eldest and try to be the one that guides the ship through the night. And she can't. She breaks down. She says, I can't do this. I need to go off and be alone. That still reads as a form of depression to me. That's something I've kind of struggled with for all my life. And it sucks. But it's another way to look at it. It's another way to look at this struggling with the keen loss that you feel. How do you mourn that kind of stuff? How do you mourn when tradition is telling you that you need to be strong? When all these outside pressures are saying you were supposed to be this, but you want to be anything but. It would be enough to make anyone want to lock themselves away in a cave. And that got really, really deep there for quite some time here, folks. And I'm going to tell you that I am someone who does struggle with this stuff.
Yeah.
And I write about it a lot. It's in my writing, in my poetry, in my Twitter and co-host and so many other social media posts out there, which mostly just evolved to me either making light of it, being honest about it, or being frustrated at it. And you just gotta find ways to laugh and carry on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those are two, like, big reads on my end, Doc. What about yours?
I mean, you know, you and I think have a very similar experience in some regards as pertains to, you know, the traditions we came up in, the demands of tradition, pressures of, you know, being the heir of, you know, famous people, you know, locally famous or community famous or what have you.
Or even just, like, academically famous in some cases.
You know, prominent.
Mm-hmm. It's simple enough to say difficult, but difficult doesn't capture it all.
Difficult doesn't capture, yeah, exactly. Difficult doesn't capture it all. Like, you know, for you and me, right, all these years later, you know, there are still moments, of course, where we both, I think, feel like we're never going to escape from the, you know, from the weight of it.
Yeah, from the trauma of it all, and that's, like, another part of it. It does just kind of trap you in those loops.
Yeah. And you plummet deeper and deeper and deeper, and then you realize that, you know, as fucked up as you thought it was, it's actually worse. So what do you do, right? What do you know, you can sit in the cave for quite a while, right? But how do you go forward is, I think, what I find myself often thinking. I mean, that's what prompted my having written an entire book this year. How do I take all of this and make something with it, put it back together?
And that's me and my poetry. That's me and some of my own writing. Like, sorry to shamelessly plug the
Please
anthology
do.
again, folks, and everything, but
Yeah, it's a good anthology. There,
I'm.
between the two of us and a bunch of like really other really amazing writers, we're in good company.
Yeah, like, my story is called All the Time in the World Here, and it's a conversation between two immortals. And not like the Chinese immortals here, just people who drank from the Fountain of Youth, who now had to sit across from each other and recognize that their relationship has fallen apart, that they have, for different reasons, want to try to reconnect. And it's difficult. And I have and am going through some of that kind of stuff these days, but like that's how sometimes you process it. That's sometimes how you process this trauma, this emotional baggage, and sometimes that's not gonna work. Like this Sunday, and this is Monday when we're recording it, folks, so yesterday for me, I really couldn't write to save my skin. I was in that deep of a depressive funk. And my beloved Maya, well, she was also in a bit of a funk herself. But we found ways to lift each other out of it. And this is again tying back to Ame no Uzume, where it is sometimes you need outside help. Sometimes you need friends who are there to help you. Sometimes you need people who are really just going to do the most absurd, ridiculous, or show-stopping thing to shake you from your reverie, to shake you from this depression that you found yourself in. And I think that's amazing. I think that we can turn to these stories, these myths, and find this power, this way forward for ourselves. I swear to heaven, we need to find like a titch joke to put in here or something because this is getting too heavy for any of us.
I mean, look, that's an entire episode of its own, that's
Yeah.
something, that's something that I particularly feel very strongly about, like in terms of my, finding my sense of empowerment and my sexuality and my relationship with my body, being okay with what with the whole second puberty thing that we trans feminine folk go through,
Well, trans people in general.
trans people in general, but like, I mean, we're talking specifically about tits here.
Fair.
Understanding that yes, it's okay to want to be curvaceous, and Ame no Uzume no Mikoto and her shocking delight in her divine cleavage, if you will, brought light back to the world. So if that brought light back to the world, then, maybe it's okay that I feel good about my breasts.
Well, I think, like, it could be viewed as body positivity. It could be viewed as feminine liberation.
Yes.
There are a lot of different ways that you could look at that and everything here.
I like the depictions of her that have her in various states of undress with the spear that's associated with Sarutahiko Okami.
Ah, yes.
Read into that whatever allegory that you wish.
The one time that she flashed her tits to stop a war.
Yes.
That's a different episode.
That's a different episode.
But, and even just going back to the feminine liberation thing and everything here, going back to the gay reading of this,
Yeah.
going back to the taking delight in beauty.
Taking delight in one's own beauty. I mean, when you think of what, like, again, to think of like thinking of the of what this could what this means to me as a trans feminine person, right? Trans feminine people enjoying their own bodies, like loving them, finding them attractive, is pathologized. Like, it's pathologized to all get out. There are BS diagnoses that transphobic practitioners have even created for this, when people of all sorts have all kinds of delight in their own bodies, and not trans and otherwise. And, you know, this isn't anything to pathologize. This is just natural.
Yeah. And that's... it's disgusting.
Yeah, the fact that this is pathologized is disgusting. Because, you know, delighting in one's own body, like daring to say, yeah, I look good. I like that, you know, I'm shaped like this, you know, that's fine. That's great. Right?
Mm-hmm. It is. But like, what I was also gonna say on that end is just sometimes you need someone that you are intimate with, someone that you look at with that same kind of beauty, that same kind of eye and attention to their own beauty, to help you feel alive again, to help you break through these depressive cycles, these depressive spirals. And I'm not saying that you need to have, heaven forbid for me to say that you need to get laid. Because right. That's not what I'm saying here.
That's not the point here.
But like,
what I think I get from this is, like, if I can give the example of one of my own relationships. So I don't know if I've mentioned before on the podcast, but I am polyamorous, and one of my partners, you know, when I actually like had the talk with her, because we sort of danced around this issue of are we into each other, are we not into each other, for a very long time. And finally,
boy, howdy, did you?
You remember?
Oh, I do.
But for the longest time, we kind of danced around the issue, and you know, it was coming up to her birthday, and I drew a portrait of her in this style, rather relevant to our conversation here. This style of hokusai, Katsushika Hokusai's woodblock print of Ame no Uzume no Mikoto, with the spear. Except mm-hmm. I drew my now partner dancing in one of her favorite dresses with a cane, with one of her canes, but I had drawn it longer and in the style of a naginata, which is a kind of Japanese pole arm. She looked at me and she said, I like how you see me. And I just started tearing up, and I said, well, it's funny you should say that, because I've been having these feelings about you for a very long time, and etc., etc., and it all came tumbling out. And then she went, oh my god, you're never gonna believe this, but...
And they were both bottoms.
And they were both, well, that's another conversation.
We are definitely gonna have to put, like, a sexual content warning on this one, aren't we?
Yeah, I guess, yeah. But the point is, like, that moment, like, what I guess I'm getting at here is that moment of... she saw how I depicted her. She saw how I see her. And she tends to be a little bit hard on herself about a lot of things. She also has this struggle with depression, but also with self-image. And so seeing how somebody else saw her, and then not only that, but that being the gateway to actually having a conversation of, I think I have feelings for you. I think I have feelings for you too. How long has it been like this? Too long. Let's do something about that.
And I guess I bring up the whole context on we're going to need to have a sexual themes content warning with this here. Because, like Nairi, I am polyamorous as well. Like Nairi, I have multiple partners. But I've kind of just openly admitted that I have depression this episode here. And... sometimes what really makes me happy is seeing my partners being 100% themselves. And my partner Vera has the most amazing sense of style I have ever seen. She has eyeliner so sharp she could kill a man with it, and it would still not run.
Mm-hmm.
She dresses like she's Morticia. She puts Elvira to shame, kind of thing here. And then there's copper-headed Maya, and I love her so deeply in those freckles. And when they talk about how they see me, when they tell me how I am, when they just send me things that is them being beautiful, being themselves, I can't help but feel better. Like, I have a hard time smiling, and you've known me a long time, Nairi.
Yeah.
I'm a pretty dour-faced individual. But when I actually need to sit down and smile for the camera, I think of them, and I just feel it creep up on me. And it's natural, and it's soft, and it's quiet. My joy is quiet, but it is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's how I relate to Amaterasu Omikami. I have these moments where I do hide away and I just try to seal myself up from the world. And then I think of them. Please forgive me, folks. I'm very emotional this winter, apparently.
That's okay. This is yet another thing I think in which we can find some comfort in thinking of how, you know, even in these ancient and hallowed tales, you know, the kami themselves have these very strong feelings as well.
And these very relatable struggles.
Yeah.
Like, I've compared Amaterasu's state, Amaterasu Omikami's state, her point of being, to some of the own struggles that I have, and I look to her for guidance. And I'm not looking to hide myself in a cage, folks, but I am looking to find my way to come out of my own shell more. To be myself out there more. And it's difficult. But it's worth it.
Yeah, every time.
And I find that it's very beautiful, Nairi, that you find this solace in Ame no Ozume. Where it is, I am finding beauty in my own body, in my own way of being unapologetically trans and loving every instant of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's gorgeous.
Thank you.
Well,
it's important, I think, also to note, given where you and I both come from, you know, in terms of prior affiliation.
Mm-hmm.
In as much as Hachiman Okami-sama is my Ujigami-sama, Ame no Uzume no Mikoto, in particular, I think I feel a great sense of gratitude to. Because given where I came from in terms of my prior worldview, my prior religious affiliation, and how, you know, as an Armenian Protestant, I came up in a shame culture.
Mm.
And that extended to sexuality, that extended to bodies and, you know, the shape of, you know, what should my body look like? What should my relationship with, you know, with my body be? How should I, you know, how should I dress? How should I, you know, carry myself? That was all very tightly controlled to the point that, you know, there was this measure of disgust almost, you know,
yeah,
that it was all sinful. And I cannot overstate the power that I have, that, like, the strength that I have drawn from Ame no Uzume no Mikoto and her story, you know, and just, you know, I feel like it did so much to help me build a healthier relationship and to kind of, in a sense, bring myself out of the cave, you know, to bring myself out of that box, and to be able to have a, you know, have body positivity and sexuality and all of that be a part of my life. Not only without shame, but without apology. In fact, I had a dream of her right at the beginning of my transition. That was actually kind of one of those landmark moments in my transition that I always look back on sort of, very fondly. I had a vision of her because I was half asleep. I was having dental work done, and I had a vision of her appearing and telling me, "I will teach you to dance." And it indeed, it was her. It was her dance. At the mouth of the cave of heaven that that did what it did. So, it's this is important to me, and seasonally, personally, this has significance.
And I guess building on my own drawing inspiration from Amaterasu Omikami, drawing parallels between some of the things that I've been through. Being AMAB in the Mormon Church is a lot. And AMAB being assigned male at birth. You are given a lot of responsibilities at a very young age, to stand for God and everything, and that's capital G Christian God there. To prepare yourself to go on a mission, to go out into the world and preach the gospel at a very young age still. And I was also in charge of quorums. I was called to be a deacon's quorum president, a teacher's quorum president, the assistant to the bishop in the priest's quorum. I was given these duties to serve the community, to help out where I needed to. And that pressure gets you, but sometimes you'll screw up. And if I could tell younger me that that's okay, I think it would have done them a lot better of a good. Because last Friday, I had a job at a school. And the school had six different computers that needed to be repaired. And the parts came in, and I start replacing them. The first one is just a computer screen, and it's just like, oh, this should be easy enough. Pop out the screen, pop in the new one, turn it on. It works, and then I jostle it, and the screen breaks. Turn it off, turn it back on. Works again. Jostle it slightly again. Screen breaks. And there's three other screens, and I'm over here just like, this has been a misdiagnosis of what's going on with these computers. This is beyond my control. I am not at fault with this here. But what I can do is explain what's going on here. And a lot of it is recognizing what is within your power, what is within your responsibility, and what is your due diligence. And I am grateful that I can turn to, again, Her Augustness to just say, how did you do it? How did you deal with this? And feel this reaffirming, like, there are some points where I screwed up, but I kept trying. And so I go back to that same school today because there's still more that I wasn't able to get done while I was there. But I was able to get all of it done today. And they worked. And that's the thing. You will falter. You will have moments where you will stumble. Get back up. Get back out of the cave. Try again. This has definitely been one of the more heavier episodes, hasn't it?
I mean, we've gone from seasonal depression to boobs and back again. So, we've had we have a bit of a range, I think, you and
Oh,
I.
yeah. And I mean, to be honest, that is another way that you can just view this whole story. Anyway, Doc, where can they find you?
Well, they can find me, a little bit different now because Twitter burned down.
Oh, it's still there, air quotes. It's burning, but it's
It's
still
burning.
there.
Oh, monks, what is burning? But this is not going to be the
Everything.
syncretism episode. Or
We've
is
already done
it?
the
We've already done the
syncretism.
syncretism episode.
Hey, we can't keep doing this.
Oh, man. Okay, so, oh God, we have, it's been a year now. Can you believe it? It's been a year, you and I, of doing
Oh, my
this.
heavens, this has been a year. Oof.
Yeah, it's been a year now, and we've got bits now. Like we've got running jokes. We've got the syncretism episode and the screaming, and always screaming.
I mean, I stole screaming from cryptotheism on Tumblr, but
I think we've successfully what with the graphic though.
Yeah.
But given that, you know, amongst what is burning, you know, the bird site is burning down, I am in the middle of realigning my social media presence. I'm still on Twitter, but I my account is locked now. Like, I have protected my tweets because I don't want to, like, I'm going to keep it up, but, like, I'm not going to, like, actively post there anymore. So I'm on Mastodon. I am on Post. I am on Counter Social, Co-host, Tumblr, WordPress, all at Riverside Wings.
Well, and you can also find me still on Twitter, fortunately or unfortunately, at FZoeBlackheart. That is also where you can find me on Tumblr. Please don't make it weird. I generally don't try to talk about Shinto on my main Tumblr.
Oh, that actually reminds me. We have a Tumblr now for Clayera.
I was going to plug that as well, yes. You can also still find me on Co-host again at FZoeBlackheart. Just basically look up FZoeBlackheart and you'll probably find me, for better or worse. I am not responsible for your experience with my stuff. You gotta handle that on your own. I'm just putting that one out there, folks. Otherwise, Doc, what can I help you with?
Well, what do you mean?
Well, we need to figure out episode 10. Should we see about just doing something for a AMA? Do a live AMA and record it?
I mean, if you want to do another AMA on Twitch, we can do another AMA on Twitch. I mean, that's certainly something we could do.
Yep. I think on Saturday.
Yeah, we could work something out like that. Yeah. Yeah. And mm-hmm. besides, you know, now that we've sort of realigned a little bit in terms of the podcast's presence, I think going forward we are aiming to have a little bit more of an activity on a couple of different platforms. TBD. So, you know, keep your eyes open.
We're still on Twitter. Don't worry.
We're still on Twitter, but it's just like, you know, given where things are going there. There has had to be a little bit of a realignment, so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would also say that don't lose sight, you know, y'all out there listening to this, don't lose sight of the fact that as dark as it feels right now, you know, as cold and as dark as it feels right now, that the light will eventually come back to the world. There will eventually come that glorious dawn. But right now it's December and it's freezing and dark and, you know.
And in the case of that, sometimes you have to be the light itself.
Yeah.
Like, to steal from the Christians here. Be the light yourself.
Yeah. You know, sometimes the thing to do is to get up on the wooden washtub and do the dance yourself.
And find your own way out of your own caves, folks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, thank you again for joining us here on Clara.
Yes.
I'm Zoe.
And I'm Nairi.
And until next time.
Until next time.
Stay curious.
Stay in awe of nature.